This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. If election season is stressing you out, please know this: you are not alone. An American Psychiatric Association poll found 73% of adults are particularly anxious about this year's election. But this isn't the only stressful presidential campaign that Americans have weathered, and I'm not just talking about the one 4 years ago. Joining me now to put our political polarization into historical perspective and offer tips on how to manage our election anxiety are Miami University Associate Professor of History and Graduate Studies Director, Lindsay Schakenbach-Regali. Thanks so much for being here, Lindsay.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Cincinnati Children's Director of Community Integrated Behavioral Health, Lynn Merck. Welcome, Lynn.
Thank you for having me as well.
Miami University and Cincinnati Children's are financial supporters of Cincinnati Public Radio. Lynn, our producer's 9-year-old son told her the other day that people who drink Mountain Dew are racist. And when she asked where he heard that, he said, "Oh, I heard it on the radio." And that made us all wonder, how do we talk to our children about this election, about some of the rhetoric they hear, some of the confusing messages they're getting? What's your advice?
Well, it's exactly what you mentioned this individual did first, is where did you hear that? So trying to understand the source of that information is helpful, and to thank them for sharing that with the adult. So that's a big focus, is really encouraging kids to dialogue with us, to have conversations about what they're hearing, what they're seeing, and where they're hearing and seeing it, to invite them to share their own emotions or thoughts about those things they're hearing and seeing, and to also validate those emotions. Of course, it's going to vary by age, right?
Sure.
So age and developmental stage is varied in terms of how in-depth we get into those conversations. But opening up the door for those conversations around what they're hearing, what they're thinking, how they're feeling. And then, of course, we do want to, if there is misinformation that is very evident, we can clear that up. We certainly can also share. Sometimes it may not be misinformation. It could be information that is different from how we feel as the caregiver. It's okay to share our own thoughts and feelings, but hopefully we also invite our young people to share their thoughts and feelings in a way that's respectful.
Yeah. And Lynn, as we're coping with helping our children navigate this election, either with things they've heard or with, you know, their own anxiety, how do we cope with our own stress as adults? I mean, a lot of us are feeling it.
Yes. So I'll tell you what, the primary recommendation I make to young people, adults, and this is not an easy one, and you're in the media field, is to limit access to media. It doesn't mean we don't consume media, because we, you know, especially we want to be civically minded. And so it is important that we as adults are engaging with media. And we want to encourage that in our young people, although very young do not need much exposure to media. If the 24/7 media is overwhelming, it's too much, and we're saturated. So taking breaks from media is really important for us as adults and for kids. And kids learn by role modeling, right? That is the one way children learn, is by observing their caregivers. So if they see adults limiting media, and by the way, it's okay to be very honest about it and say, "I'm noticing that I am feeling really stressed by all the things I'm seeing on Facebook or TV, whatever that source is. And so I'm going to take a break from it." Or maybe as a family, we decide, you know, we have family no media hour or something like that. To a person, when I've recommended this to teens, or they've lost it because, you know, their phone broke or whatever, to a person to this day, could change tomorrow, they always come back and tell me, "I feel so much less stress by setting some limits for myself."
You were talking about role modeling. You know, many adults are having political conversations these days, sometimes with a healthy dose of debate if they're on different sides of the political aisle, but sometimes agreeing with some pretty strong language. Should adults be having these conversations out of earshot of kids, or what should they keep in mind when there are little ears that maybe are hearing some of these things they're talking about?
Great question. So honestly, 12 and under, we probably want to limit how much we're having those conversations. Children of those ages are not, they don't have that capability for abstract thinking and critical thinking nearly to the same degree as starts to develop in our teens. So it doesn't mean you can't have some conversations, but especially if they're getting pretty heated, what happens with young people is they are very observant. They can absolutely sense when we're tense and stressed, but they create their own narrative about what that stress and tension is about. So we try to minimize how much they're exposed to that. However, it happens as part of life. So if you know that your child has observed something that was potentially like pretty emotional or confusing for them, it's important to acknowledge that. Like, I know that, I don't know, Grandpa and I were getting kind of loud. I wonder how that was for you. Or I noticed that you look sad. And invite them to talk about those emotions is really important. And then just general like coping, like how you know, modeling, talking with your kids and modeling how to help manage those emotions so that, and that we're okay. Like this part of life that sometimes we do have conflicts and it's hard. But there are things we can do to help ourselves feel better.
Lindsay, let's talk about what so many people are anxious about. There's so much talk about how historic and unusual this year's presidential election is. Of course, we had the insurrection at the Capitol after the 2020 election. How do those elections, this year's and 2020's, compare to other stress-inducing elections of the past?
Yeah, so I think it's always helpful to keep in context to remember that people often feel like they're living in a moment of incredible crisis and unprecedented events. So certainly, we haven't seen things exactly like what we saw in 2020 and what we're seeing right now, but there were other moments in time where people also felt like things were on the brink. So, for example, the election of 1800, where we eventually saw the first transfer of power, but it wasn't sure that that would happen. We have an election, you know, called the corrupt bargain of 24 and then of 76.
Can you specify which 24 you're talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I know. I'm sorry. I'm a historian of the American. That's 1824.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And then, of course, the election of 1860, which resulted in a civil war. And I know that that's something that people are always afraid might happen again. But we have seen really stressful elections in the past, and we have made it through them. And so I hope that that will prevail this time.
Talk to us a little bit more about those historic elections and what made them so so anxiety-inducing, so stressful.
Yeah, so if we go back to 1800, I think maybe the lead up to that election was not as stressful as some of the others, although certainly it was a nasty contest. But what you ultimately had was two men, Thomas Jefferson and Aaron Burr, who were in people's minds kind of running as president and vice president. In those times, you cast one electoral vote, you cast two electoral votes, and so people did not specify, you know, there weren't teams of president, vice president running. So Jefferson receives the most, even though he's seen to be running against John Adams. John Adams receives the third most. And so it goes to the House of Representatives. And ultimately, it all works out how, I guess, people had originally intended, where Jefferson becomes president and Aaron Burr becomes vice president. But there's this moment where, okay, now things are getting decided behind closed doors in the House of Representatives. There's all sorts of talks of what might happen. Maybe John Adams and the Federalists might not actually agree to step down. So this is like this very tense moment, and then they prevail, right? So Jefferson becomes president, Aaron Burr becomes vice president, and we have essentially the beginnings of our political party system, and then we have to have an amendment in 1804 to revise the way that electoral votes happen. But I think a really actually contentious election was 1828, following the corrupt bargain where Adams gets the presidency from Andrew Jackson, and Andrew Jackson runs this kind of revenge campaign in 28, and we'd probably recognize some of the sentiment and some of the rhetoric from today's elections. And it's such a nasty lead up. And Andrew Jackson's wife is actually attacked so harshly in the media and basically called a whore that following the election, he actually blames that election on her death. And so we can see that kind of stress, that anxiety that people were feeling. It just manifested itself differently because, of course, we didn't have social media in those days.
Hmm. After January 6th, 2021, I remember hearing over and over people saying, don't forget, this country has been divided before. We had a civil war. How does that pre-Civil War period, Lindsay, compare to what we're going through now?
So Civil War is always that kind of threat if we come to that brink again. I think there were many crisis moments. Others, we could look at 1832, where South Carolina is threatening to secede from the Union. And it's a state that had 4 years prior voted for Andrew Jackson and then suddenly decides not to because he's trying to enforce a national tariff that they feel is unconstitutional. And so there's literally gangs of the Nullifier Party attacking gangs of Union men in the streets after party events. So things are very hostile, and ultimately things get resolved, but South Carolina, of course, will end up seceding, a little less than 30 years later. So I don't know. I mean, perhaps we are just papering things over and headed to something bigger. It's really hard to predict because history, of course, does not exactly repeat itself, but we can certainly see parallels and look for moments that we can learn from.
We're talking about election season anxiety. If you have questions or comments, you can give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. Later in the program, we'll look to a pioneering woman of the past for some advice on civil debate. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about election season anxiety, putting this year's presidential race into historical perspective, and getting tips for how to cope. My guests are Miami University Associate Professor of History and Graduate Studies Director Lindsay Schackenbach-Regley and Cincinnati Children's Director of Community Integrated Behavioral Health, Lynn Merck. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or by emailing talk@wvxu.org. So before the break, we were talking about events that led up to the Civil War. I'm not sure that helped my anxiety about the election. So Lynn, let's talk a little bit more about coping mechanisms. But first, is this kind of anxiety that people might be feeling around the election, can it be worse for people who've been diagnosed with anxiety or depression or some condition like that?
Absolutely. So really anyone that has a significant stressor on their plate already. So that even could be other life events in their personal lives, trauma, but certainly anxiety, depression, a health condition. So all of those things take up our internal resources. And then on top of that, we have the election stress. And so we don't have as many internal resources because we're battling something else. So for sure, the election stress can impact other people, individuals differently based on what else is going on in their lives.
And what are some healthy ways that we as adults can reduce anxiety related to the election or these other stressors?
So, you know, as I said earlier, I think a lot of that is limiting or being careful about the media consumption. But it's a lot more than that. I mean, it's really back to basics. So when I'm talking with parents about managing any significant stressor for their child, we're talking about routines. So regular sleep, regular eating, regular activity, social engagement, all of those kind of normal things that we do in our everyday lives, that structure, those routines, they help us feel safe. They especially help children feel safe. Younger children are very routine oriented and structure oriented. But really, we as adults are as well. And I think most adults recognize that. They love it when they're on vacation and, you know, no plan or routine. But there is part of us that usually is like, oh, it's good to be back. Good to be back in our routines. So those are important things for us to continue doing for our children. And also monitoring, because those are the areas where if there's a significant change in our child, that can be an indicator that maybe something is going on. And then the other thing is just what can we control? So you know, yes, there's a lot of fears. Anxiety preys on our fears of the future, or like beating us up about things that happened in the past that we can no longer change. So trying to focus on what we know right now. Right now, we are safe. Yeah, we don't know what's going to happen in the future, but right now we're safe. If there is some interest in a particular like political movement or something, you know, get involved. You know, that's something we can control. So if we really care deeply about a particular topic or candidate, what can we do to maybe help and get involved or learn more? So it's really about, like I said, really focusing on kind of our everyday lives, still doing that stuff. And if we are passionate about something related to the political climate, what can we do to have a positive impact on that climate?
You know, you've mentioned kind of being careful about your news diet. And of course, we need to be informed as voters. But what about online sites where people go kind of looking for a fight, you know, mm-hmm. trying to engage with, you know, the so-called trolls and that sort of thing? Is mm-hmm. that something, Lynn, that can increase our anxiety? I mean, can you help yourself by controlling the amount of time you spend on doing stuff like that?
Absolutely. I mean, I think self-awareness and monitoring is so important for everyone, definitely for adults. You know, there are some individuals that it is a mood boost for them to engage in certain debates and those kinds of things. And then there are other people, it's too much. Or maybe a little bit of both. Like, I like it a little bit, but I have to recognize when it's too much for me. So definitely balancing that and monitoring ourselves and taking some steps to minimize it.
Yeah. Lindsay, I'm just interested in how you balance that personally. You're a historian, so you know about all of these different elections of the past, but do you ever find yourself getting anxious in the present? What do you ever cut back on your news diet? How do you deal with that yourself?
Yeah, so fortunately, I don't actually engage a lot with social media, although lately I have seen various, you know, attacks even just on something as outdated as Facebook, accusing people of being like mentally ill if they support one candidate or the other. And that is really distressing. And I think that has ramped up beyond anything we've seen before. But again, I try to put it in a perspective. And in fact, I just pulled up this letter that I have on my computer from a guy writing in Washington, D.C. in 1828 to a diplomat in Mexico, saying that he felt that some people felt that if John Quincy Adams was reelected, the Union would be disposed of, and talking about people who were being dictated by all of this strong feeling, and they made it through. And so I try to tell myself that people in the past have, again, gone through really tense moments and they have made it out the other side. So I try to keep it in that perspective.
Do you remind friends and family of that too? I mean, do you find that it's helpful when you talk to others about kind of looking back at the past and these other contentious elections in history and, you know, the U.S. got through those?
Yeah, I do. I do to some extent. although I have to be careful of, you know, eye rolling.
Not everybody wants to hear about 1824.
Yeah,
is that what
exactly.
you're telling me?
But when possible, right. And of course, people would probably prefer that I talk about more recent elections. And as you noticed, I said 24 because I live in the 1800s. And so we're in 2024, but I'm back in 1824. So, yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, I started out this conversation talking about that poll that found 73% of adults are feeling anxious about the election. Does that feel right to you, Lynn? I mean, just in terms of the people you interact with, your own friends and family, that's a large number of people. Does that sound about right?
That is high. Mm-hmm. And anecdotally, it seems like it probably fits. But I don't know. I haven't, you know, looked at the official poll. But I do think there's a lot of anxiety. I certainly sense it in my personal life and my professional life. I see it in families. I see conflicts in families. You know, a child has a different political opinion than their parent. So it sounds like it's probably pretty accurate.
What do you think, Lindsay? Does that kind of that large majority reflect what you're seeing and hearing, either with friends, family, students?
Yeah, to some extent. I think it's also a reflection of the fact that we live in a moment, or I guess a kind of an era, where people talk about mental health a lot more. And this is just wasn't the case even a couple decades ago. And so I think people are much more likely now to admit to these feelings and to report these feelings than they would have been in the past. So that number actually seems to me, I guess, based on what I've heard from those around me, you know, pretty close.
You know, a lot of us have the no politics at the dinner table rule, especially when we're maybe with extended family we don't see as often. But when you're with close friends or family members, people who maybe you know share your views, can talking about your views raise anxiety? Can that alleviate anxiety? I mean, especially raise your anxiety if you're dwelling on the negative and kind of bashing the candidate you don't believe in. Lynn, does that depend on the person?
It's going to depend on the person, and it's going to depend on the nature of the conversation, I think. You know, I think a lot of people, even if they feel strongly about a certain candidate, don't necessarily feel good if we're bashing the other. And some people are perfectly fine with that. So I think it does vary by the individual and in terms of how that's going to impact their anxiety level.
Lindsay, how do you talk with your students at Miami University about our current election cycle and how it compares to these elections of the past? Does that perspective help them as young voters? Do you find them kind of, you know, putting the puzzle together that way?
Yeah, I try to provide as much kind of historical fact and context as possible while also being really, really careful to not, during an election season, let any kind of personal political preferences come out, partly because I do work at a public university and I'm legally bound to kind of steer clear of any kind of candidate endorsement. So I try to offer late 18th and early 19th century context and help students understand that, again, we've gone through moments that are similar. They are not exactly the same, but we can learn from the past and hopefully sometimes even find a little bit of comfort from it.
You know, we talked about being careful about your news diet and the kind of media you're consuming. Lynn, you talked about routine and how important that is. I want to ask both of you, are there other activities that you do yourself or that you recommend to friends and family, either by yourself or with family or friends, to relieve anxiety? Are you taking walks in the woods? I mean, what are some of the things that you do or that you suggest to other folks to kind of lower that temperature, Lynn?
Yeah. So, you know, I think the specific coping is going to vary by, again, person and interest. I personally am, yes, I'm someone that loves the outdoors. That is my escape place. I would say in general, and you may have heard this term mindfulness. I think it's, you know, it's kind of a pop culture term, but really there's a lot of validity to the idea of mindfulness. And what that means is just being in the present moment And so practicing mindfulness, that could be outdoors, it could be inside, it could be listening to music. A really simple one is to just focus on what you're experiencing with your five senses, or even one sense. So a lot of times I will close my eyes and I will just focus on what I hear in my environment, wherever I am. And you can do that for 1 minute. And if those, if anxious thoughts try to creep in, you just kind of say, I see you, but not now. Relatively simple, but yeah, engage in what you love too. You know, that's really important for coping.
Yeah. And we did get a call from Bob who couldn't stay on the line, but Bob said, I'm in my 70s and made it through the 1960s and Watergate. Everything is not doom and gloom and we're going to make it through. Lindsay, that sounds like a modern interpretation of looking at history and taking some comfort, huh?
Yes, exactly.
Well, I've been.
I'm glad somebody covered the 1960s.
Yeah, that's right. We were getting into the 1860s, but good to cover the 1960s. Well, I've been talking with Miami University Associate Professor of History and Graduate Studies Director Lindsay Schakenbach-Regeli and Cincinnati Children's Director of Community Integrated Behavioral Health, Lynn Merck. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Up next, we'll look to a pioneering woman of the past for some advice on civil debate. This is Cincinnati Edition.